Peace be with you. Friends, we come today to the end of our Lenten journey. We come to Palm Sunday, to Passion Sunday. And we're privileged to hear in the course of the Mass Luke's great account of the Passion of the Lord, Jesus' journey to the cross. I've quoted to you before Martin Kaler, Protestant theologian from the early part of the last century, who said, "The Gospels are passion narratives with long introductions." That means somehow they're summed up. Everything the Gospel wants to say is encapsulated here. I want to just touch on a few themes from Luke's very powerful version of the Passion story. Notice how it begins. Jesus at table with his disciples. Jesus doing a characteristic thing. He gathered with people in table fellowship. Inclusive table fellowship. Everyone's invited. Even the outsiders, even the marginalized, even the sick, the crippled, the sinners. That was Jesus' way. Because his job was to gather the tribes of Israel. And through them to gather all the tribes of the world. Jesus was like a magnet drawing back to himself all those who had wandered far away from the divine life. And so here, at the end of his life, he gathers his disciples who are representative of the 12 tribes of Israel. And he eats a meal with them. But not any kind of meal. He takes bread. He breaks it and he gives it to them and says, "This is my body given for you." At the end of the meal, he takes a cup filled with wine. He hands it to them and says, "This is the cup of the new covenant in my blood, which will be shed for you." Jesus, the night before he died, sacramentally anticipated what he would do the next day on the cross. His body broken out of love for the world. His blood poured out in love for the world. And he says, "Eat this bread and drink this cup, taking into yourself my very being." The table fellowship is itself a kind of intimate coherence, each one living in the other. But then, with the gift of the Eucharist, Jesus brings this intimacy and this coherence to the highest possible pitch as he gives his life away. They take it in. They eat it. They drink it. So we, every time we gather for the liturgy, Jesus again says, "This is my body given for you. This is my blood poured out for you." Every liturgy repeats this great moment when we participate in his own life. There's something next in this story that would be funny if it weren't so tragic. As Jesus signals this enormous coherence, this new way of being, he's going to give his whole life away. What do his disciples argue about? It says here, a dispute arose among them about who would be regarded as the greatest. You're tempted to say, have they understood nothing, these disciples? What does it mean to be the greatest in Jesus' kingdom? The one who serves the rest. The one who gives himself most radically. That's the greatest. They're still caught in these old patterns, wasting their time, fussing about which of them looks the best, which of them can lord it over the others. Listen to what Jesus says. Earthly kings lord it over their people. It cannot be that way with you. Let the greater among you be as the junior, the leader as the servant. That's Jesus' way. That's the new kingdom. God's way. The greatness of God is that God becomes small for our sake. They leave the table. They go to the Garden of Gethsemane. I can't help but think about the movie, The Passion of the Christ, as we talk about this scene. That movie opens with a spooky, eerie scene in the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus praying to his Father, to his Abba, "Take this cup away from me." Then the soldiers come, having been summoned by Judas. Peter is frightened. He takes out a sword It's very vividly depicted in the movie. And he slices off the ear of the high priest slave. What happens when we stop living the divine life? There's a communication breakdown. What we see at the Last Supper is the coming together of the disciples. Coming together as one. Eat my body and drink my blood. I will live in you and you will live in me. Now, when the divine life is compromised, communication breaks down. Symbolized beautifully in the story by the slicing off of the high priest slave ear. No listening, no speaking, no communication. We're divided from each other. What does Jesus do? He immediately comes over and he heals the ear of the high priest slave. What Jesus stands for is connection, communication, speaking and listening. Not the divisiveness of the sword. Peter, the one who lives by the sword will die by the sword. Healing, connection, communication. There's a continuation here of the Last Supper. The co-inherence characteristic of the divine life. The soldiers take him away. They bring him to the high priest's house. There's an impromptu gathering of the Sanhedrin. Now watch how Luke tells the story. The mobs begin to gather. There's something that's terrible and wonderful here. The Passion opens with the properly constituted community. The disciples gathered in love around the Lord, eating His body, drinking His blood. Each giving life to the other. That's the properly constituted community. That's the kingdom. That's what Jesus came to establish. But now what we see as the story unfolds is how this goes wrong. What goes wrong with human communities? How they form in precisely the wrong way. Peter has followed the Lord from the garden, and he's now in the courtyard of the high priest's house, warming himself by the fire. Then a woman says, "I know you. You were with Jesus of Nazareth." No, I'm not. He denies it. Then someone else, "But your accent gives you away. I can tell you're from Galilee. You're Peter. You were with him." No, it's not true. Then a third person, "Well, of course you were. I saw you in the temple. You were with him." Peter is petrified. He denies it a third time that he even knows the Lord. What's he afraid of? A mob is forming. A kind of community, yes, but a weird, divisive, unhealthy, dysfunctional community. How do mobs form? They form around scapegoats. We'll find someone to blame. There's the one, that Peter. We'll blame him. He was with Jesus. They're blaming him. We'll blame his friend. And in that act, this mob begins to form. It just intensifies now in the next scene. Jesus before the Sanhedrin. They strike him. They spit at him. They insult him. They question him. When he says, "Yes, I am the Son of God," they rise up in righteous indignation. In fact, Luke says, the assembly rose as one. Another mob formed around another scapegoat. Christians, I know I've spoken about it before. It's very important for us Christians to realize that Jesus is himself scapegoated. He's brought to his death as a scapegoated victim. This dysfunctional mob forms around him. We Christians are those who are opposed to scapegoating violence because Jesus was violently done to death as a scapegoat. We form community in the right way, in compassion and love and inclusion. And we must stand against these phony, false forms of community. They bring the Lord before Pilate. Pilate says, "Well, he's from Galilee. He belongs to Herod. Let Herod judge him." So they bring him from Pilate to Herod. Herod interrogates him, sends him back to Pilate. And then, in a delicious detail, Luke says, you know, from that moment on, Herod and Pilate, who had been enemies, became friends. That's a little mob. They were enemies and they became friends. How? Because they came together in blaming him. They came together in scapegoating him. Friends, yes, but in an unhealthy, dysfunctional way. The right community, the false community. That's what's being displayed here around the death of the Lord. Lovely detail in Luke's account that Simon of Cyrene is pressed into service to help him with his cross. It's beautiful detail. Also, beautifully depicted in Mel Gibson's movie. Simon of Cyrene carries the cross of the Lord. He stands for all of us. We participate in our Christian spiritual life in a carrying of the cross of Jesus. That means entering into a life of self-forgetting love, giving and giving and giving ourselves away in love. Like Simon, we help Jesus to carry his cross. We're meant to identify with him. They bring him out to Golgotha, and he's crucified between two criminals. Beautiful, eloquent scene. From the moment he arrived, Jesus identified with sinners. He did not come to lord it over us. Did not come in judgment. But he comes in solidarity with us sinners. Shoulder to shoulder in the muddy waters of the Jordan, in table fellowship with the lost, the hopeless, the marginalized, the sinners, eating and drinking with them. Now at the end of his life, there he is seen on the hill in public, in between two sinners, so that everyone walking by would assume he's one of them too. That's why he came. That's why he came, to be in solidarity with us sinners. So we, in our Christian lives, enter into fellowship with the sinners to bring life. Then finally, Pilate put over the cross. This is the King of the Jews. Yes, it is. Pilate doesn't even realize the irony of it, but yes, it is. Here's the king. Here's the ruler. Here's the one with power. Here's the one by whom and through whom our lives are properly ordered. Not Caesar Augustus, not Pontius Pilate, not any of the great potentates of the world, but this crucified Lord in love and self-emptying compassion. He's the one that governs our lives. That's what this story is about. The passion of the Lord, that we stand at the foot of that cross. We look up at that King and we say, you're the one who guides my life. God bless you.